Hi, my name is Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 23rd of 2002, and I have a home group and a sponsor, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you, Billy, for asking me. Billy had called me months ago and asked me, and I never remembered to call him back, and I felt really awful about it. And then we came down here, Sherry spoke about a month ago or so, and Billy wasn't here, and I just felt so awful, and so he called me again, and I returned his call this time. So that's my little amends to Billy for not returning his call the first time. So I'm here to tell you my story in a general way, what happened, or what it was like, what happened, what I'm like now. I grew up in a nice area in Maryland, Ellicott City, and it was a very rural area, beautiful. I had two parents and a sister, and we lived in a nice house on an acre and a half of land, and our neighbors had horses and, you know, like farm animals, you know, just a very, like, nice, lovely place to live. And I say that because I can't blame my alcoholism on my outside circumstances, you know. I had a wonderful home growing up in, and I was very involved in extracurricular activities growing up. You name an activity, I did it. Ballet, tap, jazz, a jump roping team, Girl Scouts, soccer, softball, chorus. I played the violin, the clarinet, the saxophone, the piano. I was in a drama group, you know. I really did do everything. You know, I even did a couple pageants, you know. I was really afforded every opportunity at life to succeed. And I did pretty good in a lot of things, you know. I got decent grades and all of that. But for some reason, I just never felt right, you know. I could look at the people around me and feel like my insides didn't match their outsides, you know. I just remember growing up always putting people in classes. You know, you were either better than me or worse than me, but we were never the same. You know, I was terminally unique. And I remember, too, just wanting to be someone else, you know, thinking, well, if I was that girl, my life would be better. Or if I was just that stranger that I see in the car next to me, my life would be better. And I don't know what that is, you know, but I just had this level of self-centeredness. You know, before I would say shyness or anxiety, really it was self-centeredness, you know. And I was just consumed with me from the beginning. And, second grade was too much for me to handle. You know what I mean? That's just how I felt in life in general. I don't know why, you know, music class or doing long division was so difficult. But it was like I was always sick. I had a tummy ache or something like that. And I spent most of, like, elementary school in the health room, you know, avoiding life. And I just don't know why, you know. And what happened for me was I discovered alcohol sometime in middle school. You know, I had been exposed to alcohol and had seen people drinking and had this idea of what alcohol was. I thought that when people drank, they got drunk. And what I thought drunk was this, like, over-the-top, like, phenomenal, crazy thing, you know, from watching other people. And, you know, I don't remember my first drink. I probably had some sips off beers and wine coolers here and there. But the first drunk I had was I was in eighth grade. It was New Year's Eve, and I had a friend over the house, and her and I each had 2 4-packs of Jack Daniel's Down Home Punches. And and she brought over her older brother's drinking game, you know, and we were taking shots of these wine coolers with the drinking game. And I intuitively knew that was ridiculous. And so I just slammed out all of mine. I said, enough with your drinking game. I slammed all of mine, half of hers. And what happened to me that night was just magical. And it wasn't what I had always thought it would be, you know. I said I thought I would be that over-the-top, you know, falling over drunk feeling. But instead, what I experienced that evening was I experienced for the first time ever in my life feeling comfortable in my own skin. For the first time ever, I finally felt like I was on the same level as everyone else, you know. I was no longer thinking about what you thought of me or seeking your approval or worried about who I was and where I was, you know. I was just happy with me, and I could act however I wanted to act, and it was perfectly good enough, you know. And that's what happened to me that night. And I just really honestly felt normal. That, you know, I felt normal for the first time, that peace and comfort that comes with that drink, you know. And I honestly didn't even know I was drunk. I just thought I was having a phenomenal night until the room started spinning and I puked, you know. And then it was like, oh, you know, this is why people drink. And it was great, you know. And after I threw out, the room stopped spinning and my girlfriend had passed out. And I sat up all night talking to her boyfriend on the phone because she was passed out. And it was a great time, you know. And I didn't start drinking every day, you know, in eighth grade, but my drinking did progress pretty quickly. And alcohol, you know, from the first drink, from the first time I got drunk, you know, alcohol gave me what nothing else had ever given me. It gave me that peace and comfort that I had been seeking my whole life. And through all those extracurricular activities I did and good grades and approval seeking and everything else, none of that made me feel inside the way that alcohol made me feel. It definitely filled that God-sized hole that I hear people talking about that I had. And, you know, I had moved. My parents got separated when I was in fifth grade, and my sister and my mom and I moved to a different district the middle of my seventh grade year. But I was a brat, and I refused to switch schools until high school, you know. So freshman year, I was going to a new school with new people I didn't know. And I just made this conscious decision, it's going to be different here. I'm going to find the people who want to drink, who want to party, and want to do what I want to do. And I'm just going to have a blast, you know, so much for following the rules and all of that. I'm doing me. And I did, you know, I found those people who wanted to do what I wanted to do. And, you know, through my freshman year, I started, you know, doing things that I didn't necessarily believe in, you know. Like, growing up, I had always had an idea of, you know, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to get an education, I'm going to go to college, and I'm going to be a successful, independent woman. You know, I had that goal and idea for myself. But what happened was, freshman year, you know, I had dropped out of every extracurricular activity I was in. I was no longer involved in anything, you know. And I started skipping class, and I started failing classes. And my drinking became, you know, a few times a week I was drinking. You know, I'd skip school and go get drunk or whatever, and or drink on the weekends or stay at a friend's house and get drunk. And my drinking did progress very quickly, and my actions and attitudes changed very quickly. Alcohol became first priority in my life, you know, I think around that time, really, and pushed all else aside, you know. And I really was walking around with blinders on. I stopped, you know, seeing how I was hurting the people around me, and all that mattered to me anymore was getting what was going to make me feel good right now, and that was alcohol. So, you know, the things I started doing, you know, along with my drinking is, like, you know, I stole my mom's bank card when I was 15 years old and put her $1,500 in the negative in her account, you know, and you know, she was a single mom at the time, working 14-hour shifts at the hospital as a nurse, and the only request she would make of me is to not have anyone over the house, you know. And she would come home from this 14-hour day to, you know, 10 kids in her house all getting drunk. And when she would start to reprimand me for this, I would just scream at her, because I knew that she wouldn't want to deal with it. So rather than fight me on it, she would just leave me alone, you know, and she would just go to her room, you know. And I was just absolutely awful. I was absolutely awful. I got my first altercation at 15, outside of my home anyway. And I got, you know, assault charges. And I got to get, you know, taken out of my high school in handcuffs and taken to the holding cell. And, you know, just like a true, you know, manipulator alcoholic, my mom came to pick me up at the jail, and I knew she was going to be mad at me, so rather than get it from her, I gave it to her first, you know, so she would just lay down and say, okay, whatever, let's just go home, you know, and I just really turned into a terror, and my drinking progressed more, you know, and I started drinking almost every day, and I started getting into other things that I said I would never do, you know, and I started just being a thief, a liar, and a cheat. That's what I had become, and it's not how I was raised to be, and certainly, you know, I was not making mom and dad proud, that's for sure, you know, and as far as the relationship with my dad went at that time, I wasn't talking to him, you know, he was a disciplinary, he had the emotional ability to tell me, you know, what was up, you know, and so I stayed away from him, You know, point blank. You know, unless I got really desperate and I really needed money and had nowhere else to turn, then I might give him a call. And, you know, so the relationship there wasn't very good. And my dad got remarried, and I was supposed to be a bridesmaid in the wedding, but my priorities were not their wedding. And, you know, I couldn't show up for one of the dress fittings, so I got kicked out of my dad's wedding. You know, and things like that. You know, and I remember being at his reception and leaving early because I wanted to go get drunk. Like, I couldn't even say I'm not in any of their pictures from their wedding day. I'm not. You know, and even later on, fast forward with that, I was in and out of AA for my first year or so, and they had their marriage blessed at that time. And I didn't even know they had done that until I was getting married, like, 5 years later is when they told me, because they didn't want to invite me to that. Because I wasn't the type of person they wanted to share that with. So there's that, you know. And what happened for me was, you know, I got in a car accident one night. I had been drinking, and we went to an under 21 club. My sister had just gotten out of rehab, not discharged either. And so myself and a girlfriend of mine, we went down to an under 21 club because me and my friend were old enough to get in, so we drank on the way. And on our way home, you know, I hit some black ice, and my car spun out, and we flipped end over end, landed upside down in a drainage ditch. And I was the only one wearing my seatbelt, you know. And how we all survived that, like, you know, God's grace, that's all I know. And you know, a nice gentleman truck driver stopped by and cleaned the car out of all paraphernalia and illegal things. And, you know, the cops came, and I got off with a reckless driving ticket, and that was it, you know. You know, I escaped free. And but what happened was my sister got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous after that by a friend of hers. And in turn, they introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the first meeting I came to, I just remember judging everyone in the room and thinking these poor people can't drink anymore. Sucks for them. Really, you know, I just was in such delusion. I really didn't think that I was an alcoholic or that I needed any help. My sister got me to come to the meeting by telling me it was just to spend time with her, you know, because she had moved out and didn't see me very much. And she said, just come to a meeting with me so we can hang out. So I, you know, agreed so I could support my sister who needed help. And this woman in my home group just came up to me, and she said, introduced herself, and she told me she was going to be my temporary sponsor. She gave me a big book, and she made a plan with me. And I said, okay, you know. And I couldn't stay sober, you know. I came around Alcoholics Anonymous for a few months, but I just couldn't stay sober. I think the most I could get at a time was like maybe a month. And I wasn't invested in this. I really still had a ton of reservations. I was very young. I was 16 years old. And I really thought this was great for you guys, but that I didn't need it, and I was fine. And I wasn't willing to do what this program requires, you know. I think I had done some step work with my sponsor, but I did not know what rigorous honesty was. I really didn't, you know. I had so many secrets, and I was just really living a double life when I was coming around these rooms the first time. But what happened for me in that time is sitting in meetings like this, speaker meetings, listening to people talk, I would hear little pieces that I could relate to here and there, and I would keep them, and I kind of, you know, it was like the seed was planted, that idea in the back of my head, well, if things ever do get really bad, like, maybe I can come back here. And I had had enough of kind of like the dancing double life game of coming around here, and I said enough with AA, and I kind of went off and did my own thing. And in those, like, 9 months that I was back out there after being introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, number one, it is true that AA absolutely 100% will ruin your drinking. You know, every time I would get really drunk, I would just think, maybe I am an alcoholic, you know, and then it would just be depression the rest of the evening, and it was awful. And what happened during that 9 months was, you know, I started seeing reality, and any lines that I had set for myself that I hadn't crossed yet, I crossed in those 9 months. I got into a lot of other things other than alcohol that I said I would never do, and to give you the summary, you know, one night in October of 2001, I'd been back out for about 6 months or so. And this was a usual night for me in that last 9 months that I was out there. I was in a hotel room in Columbia, Maryland, with some really shady, seedy people, you know, and I was just as shady and seedy as they were. And that was reality for me, you know, and that night I had drank, you know, like a bottle of Jack Daniels, and I had shared a bag of ketamine and crystal meth with my friend's little sister. I had shared 5 grams of coke with my friend's mom, because we're a real healthy family. And I had done about 5 or 6 pills of ecstasy, and my head still wasn't shutting up. And I was still conscious. And the actions that I had taken and the place that I was and the person that I had become was absolutely 100% disgusting to me. And I could, you know, I remember nights like that, just looking in the mirror and being dead inside. You know, there wasn't a person there anymore. It's just this empty shell of a human being. And for some reason, that night, you know, I remember hating myself and hating everyone around me so much and just wondering why I wasn't dead. And mad that I wasn't dead, honestly, because I didn't know another way to live. And I felt really hopeless and really lonely. And I just remember hitting that jumping off place that night and having that conscious thought of, I can't go on like this. If God's not going to take me out of my misery, you know, I can't go on like this. But on the other side, I knew that I couldn't stay sober. You know, I knew that I couldn't do that. Because the best way that I can describe how I felt sober in between those drinks towards the end was I felt like when I would wake up in the morning, that madness was on me, as Bill describes in the big book. Like, it just felt like I'd rather slam my head against a brick wall over and over and over again than feel the way that I felt on the inside when I was sober. And I didn't know how to change that. You know, I had no tools for living, and I felt 100% hopeless. But I knew that I had come here, and I knew that this had worked for my sister. And so the next day, I brought myself to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did not come sober. You know, I don't think I could have made it to the meeting sober. And, you know, I remember little pieces and parts of that night. I remember finding my sister and asking her for help, and I remember all of these, like, women surrounding me after the meeting. And these women were, like, clean and looked healthy and happy and nothing about how I looked or felt, you know. And they all just came around me and were so kind and so nice, and I just pretty much said no thank you in a very not nice way. Because I just wasn't interested, because I felt like there is no way you can possibly understand how I feel and where I come from and what I've been doing, because you guys look so pretty and so shiny and you were so nice. And I didn't know many genuinely nice people, you know, and I didn't get that. And but you guys were nice to me anyway, even though I was not very kind, you know, more like belligerent. You guys were still very, very kind to me. And it kind of opened the door for me to get sober again, and I went into rehab shortly after that. And what's absolutely 100% amazing to me is, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is such a divine thing. You know, this book is such a divine thing. You know, what it describes in here is 100% my experience. After a week in rehab, you know, page 24, there is a solution. It talks about that, you know, the pain and humiliation and suffering of even a week or a month ago, you know, we cannot bring into consciousness with sufficient force the pain and humiliation and suffering of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. And, you know, after a week in rehab, that's what happened. I could no longer remember that pain and suffering I was in. And it had just happened, you know. And I thought, I've got this. My ego had rebuilt itself in a week. And I told these people that I did not need this anymore. I have been to AA before, and I can do this on my own. Thank you very much. But I was 17, so I couldn't check myself out. So being, you know, the kind, loving daughter that I am, I called my mom and I gave her a few choices. I said, Mom, you can either come pick me up and discharge me, or I can punch my roommate in the face so they have to call the cops and I can get out and you can pick me up there. Or I can go AWOL and get picked up from the cops and you can pick me up there again. And being the wonderful, poor woman that she was, she came and picked me up and discharged me. And I really had good intentions, people. I really believed I was going to stay sober. I really, really did. I was like, I've got this time. I know what to do. I just have to stay sober. Just don't drink. And I came home, and I decided that I was going to just not drink, you know. But I didn't need meetings, and I didn't need people, even though I told everyone in the rehab that I've established myself in AA, and I'm fine, you know. And I decided I would go on walks, and I started walking. And I remember one time, you know, just walking a couple miles, and the whole time in my head, just don't drink, just don't drink. Just don't drink. I mean, over, like, you know, like, that's so simple. Just don't drink, you know? And, you know, I just couldn't do it. You know, I'm a real alcoholic, and, you know, I had gone to a meeting by my house, and I refused to talk to anybody there. And this woman had made plans with me to pick me up for another night for a meeting. And before she could come pick me up for a meeting, I swallowed a bottle of pills because I decided that was a better idea. You know, it was just like, you know, white knuckling it. I understand that. It's like, I'm going to stay sober, you know, but I just can't do it. I can't do it on my own. On my own, I am absolutely powerless. And I still wasn't willing after that, you know, and desire and opportunity crossed for me on Christmas Eve of 2001, and I drank again. And I woke up that morning, I said a prayer, God, please help me to stay sober, and I'm going to do whatever I want, but you're going to keep me sober. And I got drunk, you know, and I went to a meeting on Christmas Day. I went to a noon meeting where people knew me, you know, from before, and I shared that I drank the night before and I didn't want to and I needed help. And the people of that meeting brought me with them to someone's house in AA for Christmas Day. And I can assure you, they didn't invite me because I brought anything to the table, you know. They brought me so I would have a safe and sober place to spend that Christmas Day. And I was unbearable, you know, to be around, but they didn't care, you know. They just accepted me with open arms to make sure that I was safe. And that has always been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I stayed sober for almost 9 months, you know. I got a sponsor, I started working the steps, and I got through my fifth step, and but the deal is I still had a major problem with rigorous honesty. And I had cash register honesty. I could tell you if I stole something, I could tell you if I flat out lied, you know. But as far as what was going on inside my head, I didn't know how to be honest about that stuff. And, you know, I still had a lot of plans and designs, you know, in my way and what I was going to do outside the meeting. And what happened for me was almost 9 months sober, I had gotten together with some people from school to work on a project because along with sobriety came the gift of getting to go back to school. I had dropped out of high school at 16 and, you know, I got to start taking some college classes and doing well, you know. And I'm meeting up with these people to work on a project, and one of the guys is drinking. He knows I'm sober, and he asks me, do you mind? I say, no, I don't mind. You're fine. I've got this. And I was, you know, for the moment. I didn't drink with them. But as soon as I got home that evening, another friend of mine had just flown in from Florida. And actually, you know, I swear God was just testing me that day. Before he came over, I had some other friends. There was a party going on down the street, come by that I hadn't seen in a while. And I'm standing outside talking to them, and they're all getting high. And I don't get high with them, but the thought enters my mind, why can't I drink? Why am I sober again? There's nothing wrong with drinking. I can drink. I just had a bad run. That's it. And those people left, and then my friend from Florida came with another friend, and I got in the car with them. We're just going to go hang out. I'm not going to drink with them. I'm just going to go hang out. 5 minutes into the car ride, can I have a sip of your 40? Sure. After I drink their entire 40, let's go to the city, guys. Who wants to go to the city, you know? And, you know, hours later, I'm being carried up my doorsteps because I can't walk. And I wake up in the morning, and it's as if I'd never been sober those almost 9 months. You know, the madness was on. I felt like there was no way possible that I can get sober again. It's too difficult. It's too hard. I'm not doing it. I called two people. I called my sponsor and my boyfriend. And I told them, I'm not coming back to AA. I'm sorry. Goodbye. And luckily, you know, by the grace of God and some really good friends, my best friend that I had made in Alcoholics Anonymous and my boyfriend both went against sponsor direction and called me and begged me to come back to a meeting, just come back to one meeting. And I agreed to do that. I agreed to come back to one more meeting. One meeting. I'll come to your one meeting, but that's it. And I got to that meeting, and I was standing in front of it feeling absolutely just like crap, you know? And this woman came up to me, and she said, "What's going on?" And I said, "I drank again." And she said, "Well, that's okay, honey. You're an alcoholic. That's okay. You're in the right place, you know?" And it was just those few simple words that made me feel so much better. Like, oh, my God, I am in the right place. Maybe I can do this. Maybe I can, you know? And I did. And that's my sobriety, September 23rd, 2002. And, you know, I will tell you, it has been a ton of up and downs, you know? The first couple months of being back just after one night of drinking was awful. You know, that obsession to drink was there all the time. And, you know, I had believed in a God when I got here. I had believed in some kind of higher power. But I didn't believe that that higher power was going to restore me to sanity. I did not believe that that higher power was going to help me, because I thought that I had run all of my chances into the ground. You know, I had used up all my chances, and now I'm done. I have to do it on my own. But I had a new willingness to, you know. For the first time, I really started telling someone everything, you know, everything that was going on inside my head, not just what I wanted them to know or what I wanted to get away with, you know. Like, I started being really honest, and I really just threw myself into this because I didn't know any other way, you know. I was so desperate. And I remember driving to and from meetings and just praying over and over and over and over and over again, you know, and calling people and you know, picking people up and driving people home, even if they lived an hour and a half, 2 hours away from me, just anything to keep me, you know, with somebody else who was sober and Alcoholics Anonymous and keep me out of myself, you know. And I started getting service positions, and I started going through the steps again. And what happened for me was that obsession to drink was removed. And that second step came with that, you know, that the beginning of believing that this higher power, this God, might be able to help me and might restore me to some kind of peace and ease, you know. I didn't really understand what the word sanity meant. I still don't sometimes today. But I understand, like, peace and ease, you know, because that was something that I felt the opposite of all the time. And that's what, you know, it was slowly over time. I remember that, like, first 3 to 6 months, you know, of things slowly getting better and slowly feeling like there was hope again and feeling like I might be able to do this, you know. And, you know, I've had a lot of interesting things in my sobriety and, you know, a lot of things that weren't my plan. And at, was I like 9 months sober or something, 9, 10 months sober, I found out I was pregnant. And my boyfriend and I had just made a decision before I found out to move in together, so at least we were somewhat on the same page. And I thought, well, this was not my plan, but, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, I swear, you know, if you're doing what we do here, you can get through anything, whether you think you can or not. And I wasn't sure how I was going to do this, but I finished out my classes for the semester. I started working full-time, and my boyfriend and I moved in together, and we got engaged, and we had a baby, you know. And I am someone who could not take care of themselves. I am someone who could not shower or even feed myself, you know. And here I am with a life form that I have to take care of. And motherly and nurturing is not a word I would have used to describe myself when I came here. I think I've definitely embraced the role since then, or Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me embrace that since then. But and I was very young. I was 19 when I had my daughter. And but I'll tell you what, you know, as long as I stayed honest and I kept getting down on my knees and saying my prayers and kept showing up no matter how I felt, and working with my sponsor and asking for help and accepting the help that was given to me regardless of if I liked it or not, I was okay. And I was able to get through things and do things and take actions that I never thought I'd be able to do. And nobody else would have thought I could do them either. And that's the truth. I mean, I had people telling me I was making the biggest mistake of my life. And I'm not kidding. I mean, really, people were terrified for me. And, you know, I kind of was too. But I was too prideful, you know, to let that go. And I had this little girl. And the people in Alcoholics Anonymous just showed up for me once again, you know. And I had moved about an hour away from my home group because of financial reasons and stuff. And people came out to see me in rush hour traffic, you know, sometimes just to sit with me. And that was it, you know. I remember one time, you know, these two guys came down, and we had gotten sober together. And one of them is a guy who barely talks ever, and the other is someone who will talk as long as you want him to talk. And they just came and sat with me while I held my baby, and this guy just talked to us about 2 hours, you know, about his alcoholism. And you know what? I thought that was just fantastic. I did. You know, I was so grateful just to have that connection with people in AA. And I, you know, my sponsor at the time came over and really helped teach me how to be a mother, you know. These aren't things I've done on my own. These are things that you guys have done for me and helped me with as long as I've been willing. And, you know, I got to move back out to the area that I live in now. And I, you know, during that time I was pregnant, I had got a temp job at a law firm as a receptionist. And they hired me. They liked me, which was odd, because I'll tell you, I've never kept a job longer than, like, a week. That's not true. I had, like, one job at 15 that I had for 2 months. But I could not hold a job. I would steal from jobs. I would not show up. I would leave to go on my smoke break and not come back ever. You know, unless, of course, you would see my last paycheck of $25 for the half day that I worked, you know. But I just, I wasn't a working kind of girl. And, you know, and they liked me so much at this job that they hired me on. And not only did they like me so much at this job that they hired me on, but when I went to them and said, I love working here, but I can't work at a receptionist salary. I'm willing to do anything I can. Is there anything you can do for me? They gave me a chance and gave me a promotion, you know, and trained me. And since then, I've had several, you know, promotions and raises. And I'll tell you, I, like, cash checks there. I write checks. I mean, they have no idea what they've put me, like, who they've, you know, given these rights to. You know, I'm our system administrator. This is someone who's a high school. I have my GED. I never graduated high school. I have some college credits, but I'm, you know, I'm doing paralegal work without a certificate. I'm billing my time, and it's incredible. That's not me. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned how to show up for my job by learning how to show up for my setup position at my Friday night meeting. You know, I learned how to do these things from Alcoholics Anonymous, from you people showing me and leading by example. And, you know, the first time I lived with sober people, I remember I didn't come home for a couple days and thought nothing of it. And I remember my roommate, she just sat me down. She said, "Sweetheart, we're not trying to be your mother, but it's called accountability. We care and worry about you. We want to know where you are." And the thought of other people caring about me had never crossed my mind. You know, I didn't know how to be accountable or why I should be accountable. But the people here took their time to explain that to me, you know, and teach me how to do that. And I'm still at that job today. I mean, that's crazy. That's crazy. I've been working there since a week before my 19th birthday, and I'm 26. So to me, that's absolutely insane. You know, and I got married in Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, most of my, you know, my entire wedding party were sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, including my sister, you know. And you know, I'm so blessed. You know, my sister's sober, my husband's sober, my father-in-law's sober, my stepsister's sober. And, you know, I'm just so lucky I never have to go to a family event without another AA member with me. You know, they're everywhere. And I love it. You know, I've definitely, I've had the ups and downs, you know. After getting married, you know, probably for the first few years, I definitely struggled with that relationship even. I've struggled with all of my relationships sober, because this step work is what teaches me how to have relationships. I don't know how to do that on my own. I need help. And I've definitely gone through a lot of pain here, you know, seeing who and what I really am. And the last fourth and fifth step I did, I think I was about 3 or 4 years sober. It was around the time I got married, and I switched sponsors, and I did it with my current sponsor that I still have today. And I was awake here. The first few fourth and fifth steps I had done, I was honest on them, but I really didn't have much of an emotional connection to them. You know, it was just kind of words on paper. But this time, I really had an emotional connection. And I remember really being an awakening for me of the damage that I caused to the people in my life and really kind of being appalled at who and what I really was. And honestly, at like 3 or 4 years sober, I feel like it's the first time I really got an honest appraisal of myself for the first time in my life. And that was hard, but at the same time, when it talks about being rocketed into the, fourth dimension or whatever, I felt like that happened, as painful as it was. I remember sitting down writing that fifth step, like, oh, I'm such a horrible person, but at the same time, after sitting down and going over that with my sponsor and looking at where I was at, I felt a new hope. And it wasn't like this great shining light, I'm happy as hell, It was more of like a quiet, there's hope, because now that I know what the real problem is, there's an opportunity for me to be different. And it was a very quiet, hope and comfort in that. And I feel like that's what it was talking about. If you had told me all those things about myself that I discovered on that fifth step, I would have cussed you out. I don't like to hear about how I'm defective. But what it gave me was the ability to recognize my defects, and to really say, okay, I definitely feel like I've gone through a lot of pain with 6 and 7 in my sobriety, a lot of pain. There have been times where I feel like, I'm so done with this defect, God, when are you going to take it away? I'm so done with this defect, when are you going to take it away? Like, I can't live like this, And there have been times that have been really easy, too, It's definitely been the ups and downs. And, I'm trying to think what else, I didn't do my eighth step probably until I was, 5 years sober. I was really slow on getting past the fifth step in my sobriety, and I feel like I was just for a long time just really blind to what was going around me. I had so much outside circumstance that I could focus on to keep myself busy. I took a long time to really look inside and see what was happening. And, I started making amends, and I still have amends left to make, but that's been a great experience for me. I don't have any really cool men's stories like I hear a lot of people share, which I'm kind of sad about, but I'm sure I will one day. But my amends have been what they've been, I've been able to go back and be different. And not just go back and say I'm sorry or give you money, but be different in the relationships I'm in, I can control myself today, I can allow God to control myself today. I can allow God to be my disciplinary, and to be a kind person most of the time. And that's something that I can't do on my own. And the more amends I've made, number one, the easier it's gotten too. And I have had some cool experiences. I had someone else who didn't get sober but kind of found what worked for them and come back and find me and make amends to me. And that was really cool. I still haven't had that happen really since then. Well, maybe a couple times. Anyway, I'm getting off track. But that was cool, and I got to make my amends back. And we're still in touch today, And I have a lot of relationships today that I've been able to amend. And absolutely with my dad, oh my gosh, my dad and my stepmother, oh my gosh, I love them. They're my best friends today, and I didn't talk to them. I didn't want anything to do with them when I was drinking. And I talked to my dad this morning. My stepmother is awesome. She is my children's grandmother. No, it's not step green. She is their grandmother, and she has been present in my life since the day I got sober. I got to go live with them for a few months in sobriety and really build a relationship with this woman. And I love her today, and I would not have said such nice things about her when I was drinking. And she's amazing. I can sit and talk with her about her difficulties, my difficulties, whatever's going on, and there is nothing between us today, you know. It's just, we have our relationship and that's it. There's no turmoil, there's no nothing. And the same with my father, you know. And what I think is funny, I've almost become closer with my stepmom than my own dad, you know, because we're, you know, we have our girl talk and stuff, and he doesn't really do that. But he's my friend, too. You know, we can get together and we can have lunch. We can hang out. We can chat about work, like whatever. And, you know, I don't owe them money today. And I don't ask them for money anymore, you know. I've learned how to become fully self-supporting. And that's just crazy. I didn't know how to do that. But it's all been a result of this, you know. And I also because I have an amazing sponsor who I love dearly, you know. She really gives a lot of her time to me and a lot of her patience and compassion. I don't think my sponsor's ever yelled at me, ever. Ever. Maybe, I don't know why, but she hasn't. And she is always impatient. If she's given me a suggestion or direction, I ask why, she takes the time to explain it. And she has always been a kind, loving force in my life who's wanted better for me than I've wanted for myself. Don't get me wrong, she tells me the truth. She does tell me the truth, and I may not like it. But she's very patient and she's very loving, and that's helped me a ton through the steps because I need patience, you know. I'm especially, you know, stubborn, and she's been great. So, and you know, there's been a lot of things that have happened in my sobriety that I thought that I wouldn't be able to stay sober through, you know. Or that I would see other people go through and wonder how they weren't a mess in AA. And, you know, I've been broke in sobriety. I've had money in sobriety. You know, in between my daughter and my son that I just had 2 years ago, I had 3 miscarriages. And that was difficult, you know. But my sponsor was there for me every step of the way. And everyone in the rooms was there for me every step of the way. And my sponsor just kept, she always reminds me, we can't get stuck in self-pity, you know. I just have to keep going. You keep putting one foot in front of the other. You keep saying your prayers. You keep sharing your story. You keep going to the meeting. You keep picking up chairs. You keep doing this stuff, and you keep looking for all the good things you have in your life. And, you know, she always reminds me of that, and I love that, you know, because that really does keep me in such a place. You know, if I'm looking for the things that I have rather than the things I don't, if I am feeling grateful, if I am feeling open, that allows room for the sunlight of the Spirit in my life. And, you know, recently what's been going on in my life is, you know, my husband got laid off back in October on our babysitter's birthday, so I got to lay her off on her birthday, which was awesome. But she's a friend of ours in Alcoholics Anonymous and was one of my bridesmaids, you know, so she understood. And that same week, my grandmother had passed away, and our water heater flooded our house like 3 or 4 times. It broke. And it was just like a week, you know. And, but I felt so grateful because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was the last family member that got to see my grandmother before she passed away, and that's not me. And I had got to give her something and spend time with her and share pictures with her. And I've never experienced something like that before in my life. And I wasn't particularly close with my grandmother, but she was a sweet old lady, and she was really wonderful. And I just felt so grateful that because of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's somewhere where I could show up and maybe bring a little bit of joy. And I, you know, it was just wonderful. And you know, my husband is still laid off, but the deal is, you know, things are not perfect in my life. I can't pay my mortgage, but I've never been happier. I've never felt more at peace in my life than I do right now. And I've never felt more of a presence of God in my life than I do right now. You know, I'm surrounded by amazing people on a daily basis. I get to work with Tammy, you know, and I get to work with a few other awesome people from AA. And, you know, everywhere I go, there you are. You know, I can't get away from you. I had a brunch with my mother this morning and my husband and my kids, and I have a hard time with my mother still today. She's a wonderful woman, but, you know, she's got a little bit of mental illness going on, so it can be difficult at times. And, you know, some of my friends knew I was doing this morning, and I got like 4 phone calls this afternoon, like, how was Brent, you know? And I just thought it was fine, you know, we were good, but, you know, people care here. And I try and do the same for my friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, and for my friends outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I get to take this everywhere with me. You know, I take this into work, I take this into everywhere I go, and, you know, people I've never met before. You know, I went to a bridal shower with my girlfriend, who's a assistant leader for a senior Girl Scout troop, and her Girl Scout troop was throwing her a bridal shower, and so I went with her to this, and we were, like, helping clean up afterwards, and all of them were like, you guys don't need to help clean up, you know, like, what are you doing, like, this is so weird, but that's what we're taught to do here. You clean up, you know, you throw away the trash, you do the dishes, you take out the trash, like, this is what we do, you know, we be of service, and you know, that's AA, that's absolutely 100% AA, you know, and the little things that I take for granted on a daily basis from sobriety, you know, the little gifts, the being able to go to sleep at night, you know, without having the TV on or without popping a pill or taking a drink, you know, just being able to lay my head down on my pillow most nights and go to bed, unless, of course, I'm nursing a nice little resentment, then, you know, maybe not so easy. But overall, in the most part, I can sleep today, which is something I couldn't do when I was drinking. And when I wake up in the morning, I'm happy to be alive. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, before, I just want to pull the covers over my head and stay there and hope that everything just went away. And I love my life. I show up for work. I can show up for my family, you know. I can be involved in my kids' lives, you know. I do things that I don't want to do because it's the right thing to do. That's crazy for someone like me, you know. I'm so selfish to the core, and to be able to get out of myself and take opposite action and have faith that I'm going to be okay and to not live in that constant state of anxiety is just crazy. I never thought that would ever happen. The anxiety especially. I always lived in anxiety 100% of the time. And today, and I never thought it would get this good. Never, ever, ever did I think it would get this good. Today, I have very, very, very little anxiety in my life. And if I feel anxiety cropping up inside me, I pinpoint it down really quick. I'm like, oh no, what's causing the anxiety? Let's get rid of it, take care of it right now, you know? And that's 100% amazing. You know, I hope that I never forget where I came from, you know, because I owe a huge due to Alcoholics Anonymous for the gifts I've been given, you know, and a due that I'm never going to be able to repay. So that I hope that I can never forget, so I can stay here forever, you know, because I absolutely love it. There's nowhere else I'd rather be, no matter how I'm feeling. There's nowhere else I'd rather be. And I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you so much, Billy, for asking me, and thank you for letting me speak.